good times together. We spend a lot of 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 good times together.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. And I'm in my beautiful Westtown apartment with a lovely lady, and her name is Heidi Lombardo.
Hello.
There it is. I've known Heidi for a few years now through my illustrious job at an illustrious bar. And Heidi and I have something in common, and that is we both work in the service industry.
That's true.
I work in the service industry because actually I have a few jobs. That's my favorite job. And I'm going to guess that working in the service industry for you is quite different.
Well, it's not different. It's been my job for as long as I can remember, since I was about 16.
Where did you work at 16?
I worked at the original Pancake House in Oak Park.
Ooh, was this the one on...
On Lake Street.
Yeah.
And I showed up and they told me I was going to be a hostess, and they actually said, "You're a waitress." And I was like, "Well, no, I'm not a waitress." And I've been a waitress ever since then, so I guess I am.
So that's really sad and depressing in a weird way.
Indeed.
Okay, why did you need a job at 16, or just didn't want to be in the house?
I needed a job. I didn't need one, but I wanted to have...
You weren't like a runaway.
No. I lived at home, but, you know, if I wanted to have certain things... I have a lot of siblings, so my parents...
How many siblings do you have?
Four siblings.
I did not know this.
I do. I have three sisters and a brother.
Really? Okay. Where are you in the line?
I'm number four, so we're all in a row, like within, you know, 2 years or less.
Is it a Catholic family?
I mean, technically, but...
Hell yeah, it is a Catholic family.
Technically.
Whatever. So, you live with your little sister?
I live with my older sister.
Your older sister.
I have two older sisters, but I live with the one who's closest to me.
How is it living with a sister?
You know, it's good. It has its ups and downs, but my sister and I have very different schedules, which we attribute to our being very good roommates, because we really don't see each other very much. And whenever we do see each other very much, we tend to start arguing, so...
Your normal sibling rivalry.
Yeah, but we definitely have cut out a lot of the bullshit. We don't really fight about... silly things or argue about, you know, who's doing the dishes or clothes or stuff like that. So.
So you're not living like a Disney Channel sitcom?
No, not at all.
You live in an area where I used to live. I used to live in Pilsen, on the edge of Pilsen. You're in East Pilsen now.
Yes.
You're getting out of East Pilsen and actually moving back to this neighborhood where you used to live.
I am.
Why is that?
Well, I didn't necessarily intend to move there. I started looking in Pilsen when I was going to move, and I was open to it because it's close to where I go to school, but it's not really what I thought it was. It's not very neighborhoody. I feel like I can't go for walks. I don't feel like...
When you say you can't go for walks, is it a safety thing, or is it there's nothing you want to walk and look at?
There's nothing... I don't feel like... It's very industrial and
it's
desolate.
Let's give people... It's on 18th, like, and don't go to the address, obviously.
Just
but
east of Halsted.
Just east of Halsted. And for those of you that don't know, there's a highway there.
It is. And there's a bunch of train railways, and it's very... There's a marble emporium on the end of my street.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
But on the plus side, I mean, it's cheaper to live out there.
It is cheaper.
In a way, it's
but
cheaper.
But you pay the price.
Yeah, you pay... definitely so. You date somebody that lives nowhere near you, really. They're in Logan Square, so...
Yeah.
If, let's say you're a single lady, would you have ever even moved there?
Maybe. I mean... I don't know.
Was it an odd question? I said single lady. That was kind of weird.
Well, no, that wasn't the odd part, but I don't know. I guess I don't know that my moving there had anything to do or not do with him.
Okay, for example, my girlfriend lived in Logan Square, and I lived in Pilsen. And one of the reasons why I moved to Pilsen is because I figured, hey, if I don't want to sleep here, I could go over there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I live there.
But it's not very convenient to just go home, either.
That's the thing. I would just stay there.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was working in Little Village, and you go to UIC.
I do.
So I'm thinking maybe that's why you're there.
That's part of it. But looking back, I mean, I guess looking at what I'm in right now, I'd rather not be, because in order for me to get to school, I have to walk through University Village, which is kind of like... walking on a treadmill, you just walk past the same thing over and over and over, and it's just very boring.
Well, plus the University Village is like really safe and new, and
it is safe, but there's a lot of bratty college kids everywhere, and they don't get it.
It's this weird like 2 to 4 block pocket of Chicago that seems like it doesn't belong.
It doesn't belong, and they don't really like. It makes me angry that they think that that's Chicago because they don't, and they probably tell their friends, "I live in Chicago," but they don't really.
Yeah.
I don't think know. You know.
Well, speaking of living in Chicago, we went to You lived in Oak Park. This is about you. You lived in Oak Park growing up, and you went to OPRF. Is that right?
I do.
You went to OPRF, and I went to Fanuc, which is the same high school. So we both come from an area that's off of public transportation. But when people say where do you live, we had to say Oak Park.
Yeah.
Which was to me quite odd. When you were thinking about going to college and living in Chicago now, do you regret not like going out further, like getting out?
You mean like moving far away?
Yes, exactly.
I do. I mean, I tried to get out of here by going to Michigan for a few years, and that just ended up costing more money and not being a better place for me to be. So,
but you weren't in a big city either, though. You were in a smaller town.
No, and that was okay. That wasn't a problem necessarily, but I guess if I was going to, you know, have gone out of state, I wish I would have gone somewhere farther away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you came back.
I did come
then
back.
Then you went to UIC.
I did.
Why did you come back? Was it just a money thing, or was it like, this is stupid, I'm bored?
It was a money thing, but I had a boyfriend who lived here, and he lived in the city, and all of my friends lived here, and I just, it seemed more economical, and just that I would be happier, because, when, you know, when you live in Oak Park, it's not really the same as living in Chicago, and
yeah.
I wanted to live in the city, always.
Yeah.
I always had friends who lived in the city.
So when you went back to UIC, where did you live?
I lived in Ukrainian Village.
Nice.
For pretty much the whole time. I moved several times, but I always lived, you know, within the same like 6-block radius.
Really?
So
that's wonderful. When your parents found out you were coming back, were they like, "Why don't you just live at home?"
No, actually, my parents tried to charge me rent to live at home.
That is wonderful. That is the good.
They did for a few months when I stayed there. They charged me like $200 a month.
It sounds weird, but I think that's a great kick in the ass.
Yeah, it is. It
made you get the hell out of there.
But they told me when I was already on my way home. I wish they would have told me sooner. I might have stayed.
That's wonderful and mean. You're currently at UIC, but you're not there for undergrad. You're there for graduate work.
I am.
For applied linguistics. Mm-hmm. That makes no sense to me. What is applied linguistics, please?
The linguistics part is a little misleading. It's not the philosophical kind of linguistics that you might think. It's applied linguistics / TESOL, which is teaching English to speakers of other languages.
Okay.
Which is very long and hard to explain to people. But
do you think it's somewhat ironic that your title, your job is to make people understand the English language, yet the title is very convoluted?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, but that's kind of welcome to my world. It's everything's kind of, once you start getting into all this stuff, it's sort of what happens. But it's funny when people ask me what I do, it's hard for me to explain it in a simple way. And I feel like, you know, most of my friends or my parents don't really know how to explain what I'm doing. But I'm essentially going to be an English teacher.
Okay,
to
but
people who don't speak English.
So not necessarily an English teacher, like you would
an
think.
An English language teacher.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What about this attracted you?
Well, I actually worked, for a very brief period, I did adult literacy tutoring.
Okay, where did you do that
I did that at Literacy Chicago. It was a mixed experience because I went through the training and I was assigned a couple students and I made lessons and I showed up and I pretty much was stood up for about 8 weeks in a row, you know, give or take. Maybe they showed up once or twice.
Wow.
And then I did have a student for about a year that could read, but we would work on writing. And I was sort of like his shrink. It wasn't really exactly what I thought. He just wanted to talk about everything.
How old was this guy?
He was 28.
So like roughly your age at the time, kind of, roughly?
Yeah.
How did that go from teaching to shrinkage?
Well,
shrinking.
What he wanted to work on was he had taken a class and he wanted to work on, for some reason his teacher had assigned an autobiography, so he had written an autobiography of his life. So I learned everything about this person in about 8 minutes of knowing him.
Like the first meeting.
Yeah, I mean,
wow.
Very quickly. So while I was trying, I would, you know, I'd be like, well, let's talk about prepositions or let's talk about your, you know, verb use. And he wanted to talk about HIV and, you know, bipolar disorder and all kinds of things that I wasn't really, you know, prepared to counsel him.
Keep going. This is very interesting.
So that, I mean, it was a mixed experience, though, because I would meet with him, and I really wanted to help him, but he didn't really want the help that I felt authorized to give. And then he would get very stressed out, and he would sort of freak out and have to leave. And I was like, you know, just so you know, I'm just a girl who knows more about this than you. I'm not your teacher, and I'm not your boss. Like, if you don't do the stuff I assigned to you, it's okay, you know. But he didn't like it. So I had to kind of cut things off, and he didn't want to cut things off, but I sort of had to because it wasn't really working.
This is at Literacy Chicago.
It was.
What initially drew you to that organization?
I had graduated, and I was just working, and I wanted to do something that meant more to me.
So at the time, you were, I'm guessing, waiting tables.
I was just waitressing, yeah. And I always knew that I wanted to teach someone. I didn't really know who, and I'm very on the fence about children. I like them sometimes, but I don't know that I really want to teach them.
I understand completely.
And for a while, I thought I would really like to teach high school, but then that sort of seems more like just getting through the day than it does, you know, making them want to learn how to read or read interesting things.
Yeah.
So I looked into just volunteer programs, and I found this, and I signed up, and you go to two, I think, 8-hour, 10-hour training sessions, and it's more like sensitivity training than anything else. And it was very interesting, and I was very excited about it, and then it was kind of like a smack in the face when I was actually doing it, because I just, you know, I was going on like Saturday mornings or, you know, times that weren't the best, and just not.
And obviously this is all volunteer.
And a lot of them don't have phones, or they don't have a way to be at, you know, get a hold of them, so it's not the best.
When did you decide to jump from a volunteer program that was just Saturday mornings to making this a career?
Well, I talked to the program director, and she was telling me, like, you know, why are you doing this? You should get paid for this, and you're just coming here, and I see you waiting in the lobby all the time, and no one's coming to see you. And so I just started looking into going back to school. I wasn't actually even looking into that, and I was going to go back to school for secondary ed English, and the whole time, the whole process, I just didn't feel very good about it. And
when you say the process, do you mean, what do you mean the process?
I mean, you know, getting ready to take the GRE.
Okay, I get, okay.
And knowing what kind of classes I was going to be taking. And I was meeting with a program director at UIC because he was a professor of mine, and he was a really nice guy. But I just, like, his mentality and his, just everything about him, like, I just knew that I wasn't the same kind of person as him. Like, he really enjoys being around seventh graders, and I don't. So then I was, when I was on the fence, I started looking into other programs at UIC just one night in a sort of a haze. I was really tired, and I found the applied linguistics, and I was like, now linguistics, that's really cool. I had no idea that this field really even existed in the capacity that it does. And so I just started looking into it, and I contacted them, and it's a really interesting program because you don't have to speak another language fluently, but as a requirement, you have to pretty much prove that you have been in the position of your student. So you either have to speak a language, or, you know, be learning one, or go live in a foreign country, or there's a language requirement that most people in the program meet because they speak another language
or
they've lived somewhere else, whereas I don't. So I'm learning Spanish on my own, which is great. I'll be focusing on that a lot more in the summer, but it's actually the best part of it for me because it's really hard to teach someone a language without thinking about what it would be like if somebody was teaching it to you. So it makes sense.
Okay, so when you're going to teach English as a second language, that's essentially what it is. English as a second language.
Exactly, yeah.
But it's not necessarily, because when I think of that and I hear that you're living in Pilsen, you're going to USC, I'm initially thinking you're only going to be teaching Spanish speakers English.
No, not at all.
And that's obviously not the case.
No.
So is this like once you start a quote-unquote job, right?
Okay.
Is it one-on-one? Is it a classroom? Is it in a high school? Is it a night thing? Is it a college thing? How does this work?
It's actually, what I'm looking to do is, the focus is on adult students. So
okay.
I can either work in community-based programs or at universities. So, for example, UIC has a tutorium in intensive English. So it's, you know, college age for adult students. And they sign up and they go to school Monday through Thursday from 2 to 8. It's very intensive. But there's also, you know, Truman College is a place I'm looking into, and they just have adult ESL classes for life skills, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's also there's all these acronyms. There's EAP, which is English for academic purposes. There's ESP, which is English for specific purposes. There's, you could also do EFL, which is English as a foreign language, where I'd be living in a country where English is not.
Do you have any desire to do that?
Absolutely.
Really? Yeah, yeah. Where are you looking into?
I'd like to move to South America. I'd like to move. I haven't decided.
So somewhere safe, really.
Somewhere safe. I would.
Like
I would
South
live,
America.
I would also live in Mexico. I would also. I'd be interested in really going, essentially anywhere. I'd like to focus on Spanish initially.
Why Spanish?
I've always wanted to learn Spanish, and I think part of it's just living in Chicago. It's all around
yeah,
me.
Yeah, definitely.
And it sort of seems silly that I don't.
Where did you, what did you study in high school? Because I know there was a language requirement.
I studied Spanish in high school, and I studied Italian in college, which was sort of silly because I should have just studied Spanish.
You know, can't live like that. why didn't you follow Spanish in college, and why not learn it earlier?
I guess I didn't have as much of a desire. I didn't really think I would ever be doing this then, so I was sort of just, I'm Italian, so I was interested in learning Italian, but it's sort of hard when you go for 2 years at a beginner level classes.
I did the Spanish and then German thing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
All over my head.
You gotta use it or it goes away.
Yeah, I never had it to begin with. when do you finish this program?
I finished this program pretty much about a year from now.
So this is the end of your first year, correct?
It is.
Okay. So, once you're done with this, do you think you'll be as happy as you were going into it, or happier that you've done this now?
Oh, I think I'll be happier because it's a really great experience, and I've learned so much I have my program has a lot of sort of nice requirements. I have two language partners, my conversation partners that I meet with. One of them is Turkish and one of them is Korean. And
really?
We meet. And it's just great.
So it's like the UN every week.
Kind of, yeah. It's great. I mean, they've been here for about 2 months, so it's a really interesting experience. And that's been, like, great for me. I think a lot of people in my program, it's been a little bit different because they've already done this and they're sort of used to it. And it feels maybe like this annoying thing they have to do. But for me, it's great. I love them. I really enjoy them. And I just have learned so much, and I have so much respect for people who are learning English or any language because it's so hard. It's just, you can't even imagine, you know, like the things that come up that you just don't know how to even.
So are you kind of like a culinary student in like the first year where like now you have a basic understanding of like 10 different cuisines? Like if you, for these people from Korea and Turkey, like do you, they're from Turkey, correct? One's from Turkey. Okay.
Yes.
Fucking idiot. Sorry. Okay, are you learning their languages too?
No.
Bits and pieces or no?
Not really. The purposes of the partnership is for them to practice English.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously I can't speak to them in their languages.
Yeah.
But they've showed me how to write my name and we talk about things. You have to be careful though when you're asking someone who doesn't really speak English, like, oh, well, how do you use verbs in your language? Because they don't
to be fair, like, not a lot of English speakers would be able to describe that.
No, nobody knows how to describe their native language because you're never really taught very formally, and that's why what I'm doing is really interesting.
Yeah.
Also, because I've had to learn English in a way that I've never been taught as an adult, and it's like I had an intensive grammar class last semester, and it's just.
What does that entail? What is an intensive grammar class?
Well, nothing makes you feel more alienated from your own language than studying grammar, like, as an adult. And it's basically learning the major grammatical structures of English, all of them. We went through all of them. I don't think I'll ever be good at teaching them until I start teaching them. But it's sort of like going away on a vacation and you come home and like nobody wants to hear about it. You know, you can't really talk to your friends.
I understand.
And your friends think that you're listening to the way they talk and judging them, and you're not, you know. And the cool thing about what I'm doing is, you know, we don't just learn the prescriptive, which is the way that you're supposed to talk. We learn the descriptive, which is how people actually talk. And we're meant to teach people both. We're meant to say, well, this is the rule, but this is what you're going to hear, and this is what you can say. So it's not as rigid as you'd think.
What was your undergrad major?
English and creative writing.
Okay, fellow English major here, we obviously have shitty jobs. why English?
Oh, I've just always loved language. I love words. I've always liked to write. I love reading. I think it's such a huge part of life, and I love language. I almost wish that there was more of the linguistics aspect in certain ways, because it's very, very interesting.
Well, why did you... Okay, for example, we both were English majors, and we both love the written word, I guess you could say, but you could love paint, but you could either become a painter or the guy that makes the paint. You see what I mean?
Sure.
So, why... How did your love of the written word translate to this program? Because it's similar,
yeah,
but it's not necessarily like the next logical step.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's not at all. I guess it's funny because the people that the professors I had in my undergrad were all trying to make me go to school to be a writer, and I was very much on the fence about that too, because I love writing, but I don't necessarily want the life of a creative writer in that way. I like to write, but I don't know that it's what I want to do. And I always knew that I wanted to do something that meant more to me. And this, like, for me to find this program, like, the reason I sort of felt I should do it was because I instinctually felt excited and, like, glad about it. And I didn't feel like that about anything else that I looked into. Not an MFA in creative writing, or not doing, you know, the high school education. Like,
yeah.
So I guess it is a weird progression, but it feels right to me. Like, and I've always liked the way people talk, and I've always loved, you know, idiomatic expressions and just the way people say things. It's so important, and people don't think it's important, but it's so important.
Do you find yourself in this program, like, analyzing the way your friends speak when you're waiting tables? Do you pick up on conversations, like, in verbal tics, you might say, anything like that?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, I definitely listen. I definitely pick up accents and dialects a lot more. And my teacher warned us during grammar. She said, you know, just so you know, reading's going to be really different now.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
in certain ways it is, but in certain ways it, you know,
give me an example.
Still the same.
Of how reading is different. Cause
well, it's just, you know, when you actually look at a sentence and you are made to tell someone what each part of a sentence is, it sort of starts to not even seem like a sentence anymore. And, you know, to know that something is an adverb, and adverbials are crazy. I mean, it's just like a catch-all category. But to know that someone has made all these choices without knowing it, to me, is fascinating.
Okay.
And there's so many, there's an infinite number of choices you could make. So it's really interesting when you're reading, or just when you're listening to people talk, just how people say things, you know. Just working in a restaurant when someone says, "Oh, Heidi, you've been sat," or "you've been double sat," and I'm like, that's such a weird thing to say to me, and just like, whatever, you know, go take your tables. But I definitely, I love it, though. I love to listen to all of the weird quirks about language.
It seems like you're training your brain to think in an unnatural way.
Somewhat. Yeah, and it's interesting because it's weird because I'm not fully trained yet, and I meet with these two people, and they ask me things. Casey, her name is actually Hyona, but she goes by Casey because it's easier for people to say. But she asked me, she listens to songs a lot, and she asked me about a song, and the song was, "I'm done, she's gone, something, something." And she was like, "Why would you say I am done? Because I am is in the present tense, and done."
It's a bad song.
And I was like, well... And I was like, let's talk about it. Look at the time. Let's talk about this later. And so I went and I sort of thought about it and asked some of my peers. And done is functioning as a participial adjective, much like I got married, that kind of thing. And once you start being able to even think of things in that way, it's sort of different. But
it's like the jazz music of the written word or the spoken word.
Yeah, it's really not as boring, though. I feel like people are like, don't want to talk to me or something. Like,
no, this is not boring. This is
no,
just...
but I mean, other people are like, oh, I don't want to talk to you about, who cares what a participial adjective is.
Well, that's the thing. It doesn't matter unless you want it to, I think, at least.
Right, no, yeah,
I
definitely
sound like a hippie right there.
No, it doesn't, though. You're right.
Back to the waiting tables really quick. My girlfriend, for example, just got accepted to grad school, and since she's been accepted to grad school, she's found her job slightly more fulfilling because she knows that there's, like, a set date of moving onward.
Sure.
How do you feel about that?
I feel that my job is a lot better when I have something going on in my life besides it, and I've always felt that way.
Yeah.
I've been the most unhappiest waitressing when I was just waitressing.
Oh, I'm sure,
And that's part of the reason I think I did the literacy tutoring, because it was just like, I can't keep doing this.
Yeah,
it's a great job in certain ways. It really is. And I know that my quality of life is better than a lot of the people that I wait on, just because I wait on them and I see them.
Yeah.
But I definitely, I know that my waitressing is not going to be over immediately after graduating, but I definitely feel better knowing that, it's easier for me to go to work and not, and to know that, you know, there is an end in sight. Yes.
Okay. An ideal world, you graduate a year from now. Where do you go next?
Well, if a job is available for me here in Chicago, I will take it.
So you'd rather stay here for a while than instantly travel?
I would instantly travel. I'm trying to get my boyfriend to instantly travel with me, but he has a mortgage and other things that I...
And with this wonderful housing market, it's going well for that.
Yeah.
But, okay, but is this the kind of job where you work up towards it? Like, okay, for example, you're a high school English teacher. That's your job until you want it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where if you're a college professor, you start and then you get tenured. And
I won't be a professor, really. It's sort of different. It's like if I was to work at a university, it would be a university that has an English language program. And some of the classes are for college credit, but most of them, it's a little bit different. It's like a program within a college. So these students aren't on the same schedule. They're not, they don't have the same breaks or mm-hmm. things. And it's definitely more like I'd be hired within this school in the university. So okay. I don't necessarily know that I'd be a professor.
Okay. I apologize.
It's okay, no.
For those of you that aren't in the room, I put my hand over my head saying, I'm going to ask you something I just forgot. Sorry about that. The program itself, you mentioned earlier that it's really small.
It is.
Which I find kind of ironic considering that, I don't know this, but it, once you start this job, you're only going to be in major cities.
Yes,
it seems like, for example, the town you went to college in probably wouldn't have high of a demand for this kind of position.
No, probably not. Yeah. No. Yeah, and they did warn us during our orientation that it would be actually hard to find a full-time job in a major city because they're already taken and people love them.
Really? There's
and they
not
don't,
a desire for this.
Well, no, there's a desire, but a lot of the jobs are taken and people don't want to give them up because they're great jobs.
I was thinking, though, but this is the kind of field where, with the just in general, it can't... There's more demand than supply. There's more people that need to know this than there are people willing to teach it.
There's a lot of people, until recently, a lot of programs actually didn't require my degree to teach them.
Oh.
You could have a degree in anything, a bachelor's degree in anything. Now a lot of the programs are kind of stepping it up because I think they're sort of getting that not just anyone can do it. So that's good for me.
Very.
But it's also, like a lot of the programs I've observed classes in, like DePaul has an English language program, and the instructors are, you can tell they've been there forever, and they love it, and they're very, very happy. It's great to watch, because it's a very fulfilling job.
Sounds like it.
And the students are so different than a typical college student. They're so dedicated, and they just, you put them in groups, and they just only do what you told them to do, and they're great. They're great.
It sounds wonderful. It sounds like the exact opposite of your current job.
Yeah. My job's, it's ups and downs. But yeah, no, it's great.
This is wonderful. Heidi, we're going to close this wonderful, and you've been great, by the way. Thank you for doing this. With a book from the Kids Book of Questions by Gregory Stock, PhD. So I need you to pick a number between 1 and 260.
18.
Good. Did you already know this was coming or not?
I just like that number.
It's a good number.
I didn't know that.
18. If you could be invisible for a day, what would you do?
Oh, jeez. Could I fly, too? Or
no,
just
invisible.
Just be invisible?
You could hijack a plane.
Oh, jeez.
That's kind of...
If I could be invisible for just one day, I guess... Oh, gosh. I think I might like to be behind the scenes at... You know... So on the spot.
It's okay. Think it through. It's okay. There's no rush.
If
you're invisible for one day, you don't have any other superhuman powers. For example, you can't take a bullet.
Right.
Yes. So keep that in mind. What I always want to know for these invisibility questions is, are you wearing clothes and therefore is it just like Ghost Dad? The Bill Cosby film where like the clothes are visible?
Well, oh.
Or do you have to be nude?
I guess I would have to be nude because...
But here's more importantly, if you're nude, you probably won't have shoes on.
Yeah, in the city for sure.
But let's go with, they cannot see the clothes too. We'll do the invisibility cloak a la Harry Potter.
No Ghost Dad.
Because then it's just impossible. You'd stay at home.
Yes, I would stay at home.
Yeah, because that's just stupid.
I would.
On your feet, at least, it's dumb.
Well, I mean, I guess, ideally, I'd like to witness what people that I know would be doing, but... Why would they be doing anything differently if they didn't know I was there?
You could pick a special day.
I could pick a special day. I mean, Gosh, Brandon, what would you do?
No, this is not my podcast. That's the thing. It's your podcast.
I guess if I was going to be invisible for one day, I might just like to choose maybe a really good friend and just watch them while they were alone.
Oh, man, that's such a wonderful, girly, peaceful answer.
And just see what they do when they think that no one can see them.
I just pillage and no. rob the shit out of people. That's why this is your question.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess if I had more time to think, I might be more corrupt.
No, the first answer is always the best. That's so wonderful and polite. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you, Brandon.
I'm going to plug some crap now. Charlie Dietz, who's been on the show before, wonderful band Sally, and he's playing a show on April 16th. It's a Thursday night at the Dark Room in Ukrainian Village. It's free. It starts at 9 p.m. Definitely show up to that. It'll be wonderful. April 20th, Monday night at the Hungry Brain. We're gonna have zine readings and readers of books and literature and wonderful things. Once again, that's free. And then on May 4th, Daniel Knox will be playing the Hungry Brain. So we're gonna close this show with a Charlie Dietz track, so you can go to a show on Thursday. Once again, thank you to Heidi. Visit the website youmethemeverybody.com for any of that information. And have a good night. His name is Andy.